Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with your host, the Honorable Sam Rohrer, President of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most pressing issues impacting our economy, our homes, our churches, our culture, and our daily lives from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Stand in the Gap Today, transforming the culture one heart at a time.
Well, yesterday, just 24 hours ago, moments before we began this program, there was a train wreck with fatalities involving an Amtrak train chartered by the House GOP and a trash truck that was parked on the train track. Now, at the end of yesterday's program, we promised you that we'd bring you an update on what we knew from the inside on what happened there. We're going to do that in just a moment. Now, on the balance of the program, we're going to invite back to Stand in the Gap Today George Barna. He is Executive Director of the American Culture and Faith Institute with the latest astounding research in two different areas. We're going to look in part at research that was released in January entitled Most Millennials Are Not Pro-Life. And after reading that research, I've chosen to give the segment of 2 to 4, the bulk of our program, the title of When America's Young Actually Choose to Kill Their Young. Now, that's a bold title, I know, but I think it's going to tie into this research. And into this mix, then, we're going to consider a summary view of that research, also conducted in January, and then a second one completed about how the people of faith rate President Trump's first year in office. So there's two pieces of research that we're going to deal with today. And with that roadmap for today, I'd like to welcome you all across America and around the world via the Internet, to Stand in the Gap Today. I'm Sam Rohrer, and I'm going to be joined by Evangelist Dave Kistler, president of our North Carolina Pastors Network chapter there, and then Hope to the Hill, which he's also president in a ministry in Washington, D.C., and then Dr. Gary Dahl, senior pastor of Faith Baptist Church of Altoona, Pennsylvania. He's also the executive director of the Pennsylvania Pastors Network chapter. Our special returning guest, as I mentioned, and Stand in the Gap Today for the program is going to be George Barna. As I mentioned before, he's executive director of the American Culture and Faith Institutes. He'll be with us in segments 2, 3, and 4. However, for the next few minutes, I'd like to bring in a frequent guest and friend of this program, and that is Peggy Niemaber. She works in a number of ministries in the heart of our nation's capital. And with that, I want to welcome you to the program here, Peggy. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure.
Peggy, I want to jump right into this because you are our inside person and giving us an update on what happened there yesterday. But as I mentioned, during this program yesterday, the events were unfolding regarding that chartered Amtrak, which collided with a truck outside Charlottesville, Virginia. And you and Dave were texting back and forth because we were all kind of interested in what was happening. We promised an update from you here today. And I'd like you to walk us up to date here with this perspective. Who was injured of the members on that train? We've heard a lot of stuff in the press. It's really almost kind of come and gone. But what do you know about that? And we do, and we have heard, that there were certain members who really stepped up to the plate in a way that ought to be at least recognized and honored. So fill in some of the details, be good for us.
Oh, absolutely. So we all know that the train hit a dump truck that was, or not a dump truck, a trash truck that was on the road. There is a report that has come back there's an investigation that always goes on, but Buckingham Branch Railroad, which there was a manager there that said that that particular rail, part of that railroad track, had had issues with that arm coming up and down. It's a rural area. It's a southern area. I live in that area just similar to that. And they get out of the truck and they lift the arm up and they let people go back and forth. And I'm suspecting, and probably everyone else, is that two gentlemen got out to lift the arm to try to help it. And we didn't end up with a happy ending. Three people, so one passenger that died was the person in the truck. One that is seriously injured in the hospital in critical condition is still there. And then there's another person that would be the third person in the truck is still in the hospital, not in quite as critical condition, but serious. There were members of Congress, Representative Dunn, who was a former Army surgeon. He and other lawmakers, because the Capitol Police got back on the train and said, get off, we need anybody that's doctors. And as we all know, there's everything from ministers to physicians that our lawmakers are. And so Representative Dunn was one of them that jumped off and helped Senator Bill Cassidy, was another one, and his wife. They're both doctors. There was a lady that was a anesthesiologist, and I know that they worked on the one gentleman that was deceased trying, and they realized there was no hope for that. And apparently in the condition, from what we've heard and from what people have told me, they knew that there was no reviving. But they worked on this second gentleman. They continued CPR back and forth. Several of them took turns until the ambulance arrived. Senator Jeff Flake said it reminded him of the Ball shooting, how everyone came together, and they were hoping not to have any type of incident like this again, but it ended up being sooner than later. At this point, the only member that we have word of was Representative Jason Lewis. He had a concussion. There was another person that had, another congressman that had blood from his nose and his mouth, but they ruled that out. He was taken to the hospital and returned. Most of them have minor bruises, sore joints, reports of bumps. Some were standing in the aisles, and of course, all of us have rode Amtrak trains, and standing in the aisle with this type of a jolt, going to the floor or hitting the seats or whatever is not anything that, you know, that's an easy thing to recover from overnight. But they all ended up at the retreat. So,
Peggy, let me jump in and ask a quick question. I'm sorry to interrupt, but we're going to try to get as much information as we can, and we're delighted to have you aboard. One of the other gentlemen that is a congressman that also was involved is a friend of our ministry. His name is Phil Rowe. He's a congressman from Tennessee, also a medical doctor, wonderful, wonderful guy. It's amazing how these guys jumped in and worked like a team to try to help. But I find it interesting, and I'm not trying to be sinister here or suggest anything nefarious, but within the last 8 months, we've had two things that have happened with respect to GOP congressmen. We had the shooting over in Alexandria that you are very well aware of, as is the American public. Yeah. And now we've had this. Have you heard any kind of discussions of anything that might even remotely suggest that this was not an accident? Or are they just saying it was definitively something very unfortunate, but it was an accident and nothing more?
Oh, no. There has been major discussions of that. And this is when Mrs. Brown, Carrie Brown from the Buckingham Branch Road, quickly came out and said, hey, look, I just want to let you know there was somebody out there. In fact, the day that this incident happened, which was yesterday, looking at the arm on that railroad. But, oh, no, that was a big discussion, because their understanding was when they do these chartered, everybody says, why did they get on the trains? This is a thing that goes back in history. They've done this. It's just kind of a fun thing they do, and it's just historical, and, you know, it goes all the way back. But usually the path is clear. They know that there shouldn't be anything anywhere. But I guess this rural area, back road, somebody either missed it or whatever. But it's tragic that if this indeed has to do with the arm, it's caused kind of a red flag. But, yes, that discussion has been around. And that was my first question.
All right. Well, Peggy, thank you for being with us today and for that great update. Go about your business there and keep everybody straight in Washington, would you please?
Keep all those in your prayers.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Stand in the Gap today. I'm Sam Rohr, and today Dave Kistler and Gary Dahl are with me. Our special guest next segment and the balance of the program will be George Barna, as we look now into part of research just completed. We're going to talk about the rating of the president, what people of faith think about the president after his first year. So we're going to get into that when we come back. Stay with us. I think you'll find this to be very, very important.
Christian parents want their children to excel in spiritual growth and educational achievement. Both are essential for future success in an increasingly complex world full of moral and economic challenges. BJU Press Materials place great value on the knowledge of God in His works. They teach critical thinking skills your child will need to get along both now and in the future. BJU Press Materials are available for grades K-12. From the earliest grades, they teach biblical Christianity as a system of God-revealed truths. BJU Press Materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. Teachers' editions assure that instructors have the plans and extra tools to keep your child engaged and excited about learning by teaching your child how to analyze, evaluate, and ultimately create new solutions. And that's just what today's workplace is looking for. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
Thank you, Sam, and thank you to the team that you have working with you. I'll tell you one thing about your show. You accomplish more in less time to advance the gospel and to advance knowledge and understanding of seriously any radio show I know of. So congratulations.
Those kind words from Congressman Michelle Bachmann summarize what our guests say about Stand in the Gap today. This is Sam Rohr. On this program, we bring honest analysis of today's news to you and millions of Americans every day. With a newspaper in one hand and the Word of God in the other, we connect the dots between what's happening and what God says about what's happening in light of the Bible and the Constitution. From the mouths of our co-hosts, all preachers, whether former members of the House of Representatives or an evangelist to a millennial pastor or a senior pastor of 40 years, Stand in the Gap today is here for you. Unique, current, trustworthy. Pray for us. Stand with us financially by going to standinthegapradio.com.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap today. For more information, visit our website at standinthegapradio.com.
After just listening to President Trump's first State of the Union address and covering it in detail on this program, which we did yesterday, we want to look just briefly now at some survey results that were concluded just prior to the State of the Union address by the American Culture and Faith Institute. The focus of that research was how people of faith across the nation viewed the president's performance in his first year. Now, to help us in these findings, I want to formally invite in George Barna, formerly with Barna Research, but now the executive director of the American Culture and Faith Institute. George, welcome back to the program.
Great to be back with you.
George, I'm going to start right out because we have so much that we need to cover here today with you. But at the beginning of this particular report, you started out with these words, quote, Donald Trump has just completed the most closely scrutinized, subjectively reported, and widely criticized first year in the White House of any president in memory, end quote. And you made the statement as a fact, presumably because it is true, but it's also likely that the reality of this makes the research probably more challenging. But before you tell us, if you could, the top line findings of the research, George, share a bit about the degree of subjective reporting and the degree of scrutiny given the president by the media compared to other presidents that caused you to make that statement at the outset of this research. Could you do that, please?
Well, sure. I mean, with each passing year, the whole media universe changes, and we're in a situation now where there are a couple of content analysis research projects that were recently completed, looking at the kind of coverage that was given to President Trump during his first year and comparing it to the coverage of previous presidents in their first years and indeed over the course of their entire administrations. And what the research reported was that it was hands down the most negative reporting on a president's activities, a president's life, everything about his being that we had seen since they had the ability to do that kind of research. And part of the reason why that's important is because you have to remember that people don't really experience most of the reality that they claim to know something about. Most of that knowledge is fed to them by different media sources. We have done some research, we've been doing it over the course of years now, more than a decade, where we find that the media are the most influential entities in the lives of Americans, more than family members, more than members of Congress, more than church pastors. I mean, you name it, number one on the list is the impact of the media. And so seeing that day after day, there's kind of this 24/7 reporting about what's going on at the White House, about feelings about what's being done at the White House, about desires of what would be done, about expectations regarding what should have been done. And so there's been this blurring of news reporting and subjective, kind of personal information about what's happening. We've blurred that line of what is news now. And given the fact that most of what's being reported is primarily negative, not all of it, of course, but the vast majority of it, according to the content analysis studies, well, that begins to take a toll. It's like, one of those torture tests where you just have the dripping water and it drips and it drips and it drips and it just drives you crazy. Well, that's what's happening with our news coverage of politics and government and political officials in America. There's a very slanted view. It's a very consistently biased view, and it's incessant in its presence, and it's taking a toll on people's opinions.
George, I really have a twofold question there. First of all, you entitled your report, The People of Faith Review Trump's First Year. And so my twofold question is really this. Number one, what do people of faith think about the man, President Donald Trump, after the first year? And then secondly, building upon what you just said, do you see that there's a divide between the media and the average American person regarding their thoughts about Donald Trump?
Okay, let me take the first one there. What do people think about the man? What we're finding is that most voters across the country do tend to distinguish their feelings and their perceptions of Donald Trump as a human being and Donald Trump as the president. Not everybody's able to make that distinction. A number of people do. But when you look at two of the most common measures of how people do that, if we look at their perceptions about him as a person, what we find is that 41% of Americans came out with a favorable opinion, but that varied dramatically by a person's political ideology and by their faith inclinations. So we saw that 71% of conservatives had a favorable opinion of Mr. Trump as a person, compared to only 19% of liberals who had such a perception. And you found there was a gap even between born-again Christians and people who are not born-again. A majority, 54% of the born-again population, said that they had a favorable impression of Mr. Trump himself, compared to only 35% of non-Christians. So, yeah, there is a distinction. Now, do the media and people have different perceptions? They do, but that's part of why we, I believe, see the media continually chipping away at a narrative that they're trying to sell to the public. Because the public are more positive toward Mr. Trump, and they're more positive toward what he's doing in office, they're more positive toward the agenda that he's trying to put into place than the media are. That's why we have this continual attack mode of constant criticisms, the very subjective selection of what stories get reported. Part of the content analysis, for instance, showed that the media spent a lot less time on stories that would be deemed as positive for President Trump, the kinds of things he was able to accomplish during his first year, than they reported on things that would be perceived to be negative. So, yeah, there are very different perspectives of the people and the media. More and more people now understand, they realize they're being lied to, they're being manipulated. But still, there's a lot of people who are trusting the media. That's their go-to place. But it's also why we're in this really exciting era where more and more Americans are now redefining their own personal media universe rather than tuning in to the major news channels that have traditionally got most of the audience. Now they're seeking out other news sources that they feel are more trustworthy. And as that grows, I think the American population is going to be in a better place.
George, this is a great time just to say this with respect to Stand in the Gap today. I hope that this program will be viewed by our listening audience as one of their primary news sources, because we try to bring the truth to people unmitigated, unfiltered. And of course, what you bring to the table, times that you're able to be on with us, George, is over the top informative and really, really is powerful stuff. Let me ask you this question. You've talked a little bit about the man himself and how he's viewed by believers, non-believers, liberal versus Christian. What about his policies and his decision-making? Is there a wide chasm, maybe a more favorable opinion of him with respect to the decisions he's making and the policies attempting to implement?
Yeah, once again, Dave, I mean, we find that there is that gap that exists between liberals and conservatives, between born-again individuals and non-born-again people. We have 30 different areas of public policy and, you know, presidential action that we evaluated in the survey. And overall, we had 38 different things where people could rate the president on some kind of a scale, positive to negative. And what we found was of those 38 different areas where people could rate the president, born-again Christians were higher than non-Christians on 36 of those 38. And on the other two, they were about the same. So there was no instance where non-Christians had a more positive rating of what Mr. Trump is doing in office than did the born-again constituency. If we look at the areas where born-again people in particular felt the president really shone, it would be areas like economic growth, where 52% of them felt that things were better now in terms of economic growth than when he took office. Jobs and employment, 50% said things are better now. Tax reform, 46% said it was better. Our military and national defense, 45% said things are now better. And terrorism and homeland security, 45% said things are better. There were some areas, however, where born-again Christians are concerned, where they feel the president has dropped the ball or he's not getting the job done. And the primary of those was the area of bringing the nation together, unifying Americans. 50% of born-again Christians, probably his strongest area of support. 50% of them said things are actually worse now than when he took office. He also had concerns about race relations, foreign policy, and the morals and values of our nation were about 4 out of 10 for each of those areas. Born-again people were saying, yeah, we're missing the boat. So, yeah, there's a lot yet to get done. People of faith remain hopeful. They remain supportive, but they're staying aware. They're not just giving the man a pass because he's not Hillary Clinton, which is a main reason why many voted for him. They're saying, you know what, he's the president. He's got to make it happen.
George, just in the last couple of seconds before we go into this break here, do you think that the president's performance in the State of the Union address on Tuesday night, if you were to do this research again now, do you think that would have changed people's minds somewhat towards unity and so forth?
Yeah, I don't know if it would have changed things toward unity an awful lot, maybe a little bit there, but more so in terms of opening their eyes to all that's been happening, all the things that have been accomplished that they haven't been told about. But the research I've seen indicates that that's been a real eye-opener for a lot of people.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Standing in the Gap today. Our special guest, George Barna, just hit the highlights of recent research on what people of faith think about Donald Trump. And it really comes down to information. If you listen to bad information, you're going to make bad choices, bad determinations. We here try to tell you the truth, and hopefully that makes a difference in your life. Now, when you come back, we're going to switch and go to another source of research, and this is on what millennials think about the positions of life and abortion. You'll be shocked when you hear this.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap today, discussing the pressing issues facing our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Now let's rejoin our host.
If you're just joining us now at this midpoint in the program, ladies and gentlemen, we thank you for being with us. And I'd like to encourage everybody at this point in time that if you have not yet visited our website, please go there. StandInTheGapRadio.com. You can visit and see all of the things we have on our website, which is a lot of information that can be very helpful. But you can also pick up all of the archives to this program, as well as our weekend program, Stand in the Gap Weekend, and Stand in the Gap Minute program, which all together, these three programs are airing on over 1,100 radio stations across the country. So I hope that you would go there. And if you've not downloaded our free app on your smartphone, Android or iPhone, please do that as well. Just put in the phrase, Stand in the Gap, and you can download that. You'll get alerts every morning as to the theme of this program, the guests that will be here with us, like George Barna today. And you will also then be able to communicate back to us. You can partner with us as well financially. I want you to know this is a ministry. We say it often, but this is a ministry. And we need your help. And so you can come alongside of us. And if you're being blessed by this program, then help us so that we can continue to do it more and to do it better. We're going to shift gears here now as we walk into this segment. We've just concluded the month of January, which was designated as Pro-Life Month across the nation. As you recall, we had the March for Life in D.C. some weeks ago. We just passed the 45th anniversary of Roe versus Wade, which catapulted the United States into the number 4 position of the most abortions per year of any nation, putting us behind China, number 1, Russia, number 2, and believe it or not, Vietnam, number 3. And with all of the great work done by pro-life efforts to reduce the number of abortions across the country, the often quoted statistics show that the actual number of abortions are indeed down nationwide, but is there any evidence to suggest that our nation will at any time soon condemn abortion as murder and embrace life once again? Well, to walk through some of these shocking statistics, I want to welcome back George Barna, Executive Director of the American Culture and Faith Institute, with us. George, I want to go right into this because there's so much information here. It's staggering. I'm going to start out like I did that last segment with you. I'm going to read one of the first statements that you've made in this report because I think it takes us to the heart of the findings. You said this, George, quote, "During the past few months, I have spoken at some pro-life events as well as several high-level gatherings of national conservative leaders. In each of those meetings, I have heard people say that we are in a great era for the pro-life movement, especially because millennials are highly supportive of life in the womb. But you go on to say this, George, sadly, it is not true. We are tying our hope to a myth," end quote. Tying our hope to a myth. So, George, hoping for the next generation to embrace life and end abortion, as you say, based on this research, is a myth. George, how serious? What did you find out that really underscores your claim that the hope that the millennials are becoming more pro-life is but a myth?
Well, Sam, I'd say it's a very serious situation. And first of all, whenever you have a distorted picture of reality, you obviously respond to what you think reality is. But if that understanding is wrong, your actions are going to be off base. They're going to be ineffective. You know, we're in a situation now where when we look at millennials, we did this big study on people's attitudes about abortion and life, and what we found was that millennials are less likely than other Americans to, first of all, even believe that abortion is a moral issue, i.e. that there is a right or wrong response to life. Secondly, we found that millennials are less likely to say that abortion should be illegal in all or most circumstances. We found that millennials are less likely to say that abortion is murder. We found that they're less likely to say that all human life is sacred. We found that they're less likely to believe that the U.S. Constitution recognizes that there is value to every human life. And they're more likely to want to either continue or increase federal funding and support for Planned Parenthood. So you put that all together, and it begins to give you a picture of a group of people who not only are not leading the pro-life movement, they may be among the prime blockade trying to say, you know what, we don't want pro-life laws on the books. We don't want to recognize the value of life. We believe that everybody should have choice in every situation, that every individual is a unique person who needs to be able to make his or her own choices in every situation, whether you're talking about life or economics or governance or family or whatever it may be. And so I'm worried that the pro-life movement, because they've seen the passion of some millennials, and they're an activist generation. So yes, there are a lot of them that are in the pro-life camp, but there are many more of them who are in the pro-abortion camp. And so I'd hate to see us relax and say, oh, good, we can step back now, we can relax, we can pass the baton on and know that things are going to be in good hands and, you know, we can get on to other things. I mean, that's simply divorcing us from logic. When people don't even think any longer that this is a moral issue, we've got very deep worldview problems that are the foundation of everything that we're addressing here.
George, we are texting back and forth, Gary, Sam, and I, during your conversation here, and you just used the word that was used by both Sam and Gary in text, and that is, this is a worldview issue. Now, what you're sharing is deeply troubling and obviously greatly concerning, because some of us are looking at passing the baton on to the next generation. So let me ask you this. While the actual number of abortions due to the fact that there's, you know, sonograms and there's all the technology that science, like you hear it said all the time, science is now on our side. with the technology that's available, women are able to actually see a baby in the womb. And I just had lunch where a young lady who's pregnant showed me the 3D image of her child. She was personally never considering abortion, but she talked about how that just changed everything with her when she could actually see her baby, 3D image of it. So all of that is on our side. But some would suggest that while the number of abortions is down, the actual killing of the young by the young may actually be on the increase due to other factors. What are those factors, George, and what does that say for the future of the pro-life movement?
Well, there are a number of other things that we've got to look at here. You know, part of it is attitudinal. When we look at attitudes, you know, I was just talking about the fact that they are not as pro-life as some people would like to believe. But there are other critical attitudes, too, as we look at perspectives about family, about marriage, about children with the millennial generation. They tend to think, you know, marriage is not as important as previous generations did. Maybe even more to the point, they're less interested in having children. They don't see children as adding value to their life. They don't see any kind of calling to be a parent or to raise a new generation of people who can make the world a better place. Another thing that we need to look at behaviorally has to do with birth control. And so there are a lot of, I think they call them abortifacients, different kinds of pills and other chemicals that they can take that will stop a pregnancy in the first, second, third day, whenever it may happen, very early on, so that you don't even know, perhaps, that you are aborting a human being. So all of those kinds of things are much more common with millennials than they were with previous generations. Add to that the fact that, again, going kind of a combination of attitude and behavior, when we look at something like adoption, we find that millennials are less keen on the whole idea of giving up a child for adoption, because for them, it's, as best we can tell from research so far, it's inconvenient and it's expensive and it changes their lifestyle, at least for the term of the pregnancy. And they don't want to go through that. They don't want to go through the emotional hassles. Listen, I understand all that, but as a father of three adopted girls, you know, adoption can be a great thing. And so there's just a lot of issues that we have to attack. It's not just getting people to say you need to be pro-life. There's a whole body of thinking that revolves around this that goes back to what you identified as a worldview. You can't just force people into this issue without dealing with the foundations of how they think, why they think that way, and how it relates to the bigger issues of life and faith.
You know, George, we would think here at the American Pastors Network that one of the reasons why these kind of results are being seen is because perhaps the pulpit is not preaching and teaching the solid concept of the biblical worldview that leads to the result that the millennials today have a decreased value of life. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, you know, it's a difficult area because on the one hand, it's one of those areas where when we look at what kind of social issues and governance issues conventional church pastors are willing to teach or preach about, the two that typically top the list are abortion and same-sex marriage. But we also know that people are not getting enough of that. They're not getting a deep enough understanding of how that relates to everything else. And so, yeah, there's still a lot of work to be done there as well.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening here to Stand in the Gap today. I'm Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and Dave Kistler here, our special guest, Dr. George Barna, as we look at this whole issue of what millennials think about life. And we just talked about to believe that the millennial generation is espousing life is to believe a myth, not true. But when we come back, we're going to talk about what can we tie our hopes to that gives us hope and truth. We're going to talk about that with George Barna when we come back.
Americans are a freedom-loving people. Wouldn't it be great if you could carry a copy of the essential documents that outline our freedoms written by our nation's founders in your pocket so you can refer to it every day? Well, now you can. Stand in the Gap Radio has found something you're sure to like, the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide. The Handy Guide is a slim 6.5 by 3.5 inches, yet it includes the Declaration of Independence, the U.S. Constitution, the preamble to the Bill of Rights, and other influential documents, including, in the words of our founders, topical quotes from America's founders, plus a listing of online resources for further research by the serious-minded or the just plain curious. To see and request your copy of the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide and make your tax-deductible gift of any amount, go to AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. Let us hear from you today. Thank you, and God bless you.
Hello, this is Sam Rohr. Although the term Christian education doesn't occur in the Bible, it does speak of the moral and spiritual instruction of children. It places a high value on knowledge, both of God and His works. It describes the moral and spiritual fruits of this knowledge and defines its ultimate purpose, the growth of your child in godliness of character and action. That's why we suggest you consider BJU Press K-12 materials. Your child's a unique individual created for a specific purpose. Proper instruction that includes the Bible and the relational influence of godly teachers produces a pure heart and a willing mind. The Bible calls that success. BJU Press materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. They teach critical thinking skills and keep your child engaged and excited about learning. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit BJUPress.com. That's BJUPress.com.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
In the last segment, we talked about the hope that the next generation, the millennials and younger, are actually becoming more protective of life is like tying one's hope to a myth. Yet as a nation who once revered and protected life, generally as individuals, as a government, as a judicial system, as the church, we as a culture have slid from revering and protecting life to revering and protecting one's right to choose more. And as such, we have chosen death as a nation, not life, as God told Israel in Deuteronomy chapter 30 and verse 19. Actually, that whole entire chapter talks about it. So the question is, how can we tie our hopes to life instead of tying it to a myth, as the American Culture and Faith Institute January survey so clearly pictures? And with that, I want to go back to George Barna, who conducted that research and is helping us to walk through this very, very critical issue. George, many times as we approach this part of the program, when you're with us in particular, we're often looking at what I'd term very sobering statistics regarding the church in America, the pulpit in America. And now, today, we're looking at the attitude of the childbearing age generation who are embracing death over life here in America. The matter of life is so critical to God's blessing on a nation, as Deuteronomy chapter 30 says, that I would like to know, from your perspective and your experience, and what counsel would you give the listeners to Stand in the Gap today about how to tie our hopes to life and truth and not kid ourselves by tying our hope to a myth that says we're hopeful that the next generation is going to be more protective of life? I put a big challenge before you, George, but you can do it. This is a very important segment for us, so focus this, if you could, for us, please.
Yeah, I know, and I have 1 minute to do it. Right? You know, here's the reality.
2 minutes, George.
Okay, yeah, that's the big challenge. You know, the reality is you've got to make choices based on facts. And so as those of us who have influence, those of us who lead, those of us who can direct the paths of other people, including our family members and others that we associate with, we have to get the facts. We can't operate on the basis of feelings. You know, if you go to a pro-life march these days, you're going to see a lot of young people there, and it gives you a really warm feeling inside. It's like, yes, they're here. They get it. But that's not empirical data. Okay, that's anecdotal data, that's observational data. That's fine, that has a place. But if we're going to be making strategic choices about how to use limited resources and about how to position a movement of people to make a difference, make a major change in the thinking and the behavior of the nation, we've got to look for the truth, the reality of a situation. And so there, you know, I mean, that's frankly one of the reasons why I've devoted my life to doing this kind of research, is because I know there's a lot of garbage research out there, but my commitment is to God to try to create the most truthful possible reporting of what we can measure about what's happening in our culture. So getting the facts is one thing, and getting God's truth is the other. Understanding from His Word, what does He expect of us? It doesn't matter what our government leaders tell us they expect of us. The only leader that matters is God Himself. And so being able to go back to His Word to us, His love note to us about, I gave you life, and here's what I expect you to do with it. Here's why I cherish your life, and therefore you should as well. Understanding, you know, that whole Deuteronomy chapter, Deuteronomy 30 chapter, talks about obedience to God, and that part of that is our commitment to choosing life. Part of Jesus' ministry was helping people understand that God gave you life for a purpose, and that purpose is to know, love, and serve God. You can't do that if you're killing babies in the womb. You can't do that if your own life has been snuffed out. So, I mean, we've got to put all this together into the bigger worldview picture so that people are capable of making good choices right now, with only 10% of Americans possessing a biblical worldview, only 4% of millennials possessing a biblical worldview. We are at a major deficit. We don't have the raw goods. We don't have the perspective that enables us to make the right choices. And so first and foremost, we've got to change what we're doing in our schools, in our homes, in our churches, in our government, in terms of facilitating moral perspectives, biblical perspectives, rather than simply going on the basis of emotion, comfort, and convenience.
George, I want to say this for me personally, for Sam, for Gary, for the American Pastors Network. You dedicating your life to do what you're doing is absolutely immeasurable. We cannot thank you enough for what you're doing. It provides me as a traveling evangelist with statistics that I use, and I quote you regularly from the pulpit to try to awaken a portion of the American church where I'm privileged to minister. Let me ask you two questions, and George, you decide which one you want to answer. I'm just wondering how much the president's choice to be the first sitting president to speak at a March for Life, what he did the other night by talking about the sacredness of life, illustrating via that couple up in the gallery, one of his guests that adopted that precious little baby. How much is that actually going to do to help with what we're talking about? And then, if you have time, what could grandparents, parents do? What must we do in the home to help turn this around as well?
You know, I think what the president's doing is right, and I think it's useful. But I'm scared that we're going to sit back and say, good, he's leading the charge. You know what? We know from communications research that if you want to change somebody's mind, or if you want to persuade them to think a particular way, one of the most important concepts in that kind of communication is repetition. And so simply sitting back and saying, good, he said it for me. Well, no, you got to say it for yourself. We've each got to be out there saying this, and we've got to say it over and over and over again in different ways, with different stories, using different circumstances and situations, going back to different scriptural passages to put it in context. I mean, we've really got to have a full-orbed argument that in any given situation makes sense to the person we're communicating with and is said in such a way that they're going to consider it. Now, grandparents do. Grandparents have a huge impact on their grandchildren. And so being able to tell their kids the different kinds of stories from the scriptures about how God created life, how he values life, what he's done to protect life, how he's calling us to be part of that, that's important. Positioning abortion not as an act of convenience or inconvenience, but as an act of obedience. You know, putting ourselves in the shoes of others and asking them, you know, gee, what would you think if you had been the one who were aborted, if you didn't have the opportunity to have all these great experiences and opportunities in life? Identifying alternatives, you know, talking up the positiveness of adoption. Like I said, I've adopted three kids. It's not easy, but neither is having children through natural childbirth. I mean, raising kids is tough no matter how you do it. But giving those children an opportunity they wouldn't have had otherwise, I think is a big deal. So encouraging kids to be thinking about all these things, that's a huge thing that grandparents can add to the equation.
Thank you, George Barna, Executive Director of American Culture and Faith Institute, and Gary and Dave, as we focus on this matter of life. And ladies and gentlemen, we ask that question, what can you do to tie your hope to something where it's going to actually protect life? Deuteronomy chapter 30. Go and read that, because really what it says is, if you choose to obey God and His commandments, that's the same as choosing life. We're never going to choose life until we choose to obey the Lord first. Thanks for being with us today here on Stand in the Gap today. And we encourage you to go to the American Culture and Faith website to check out more of their information as well as ours.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap today. Stand in the Gap today is another quality ministry of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most pressing issues affecting the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. We take seriously the command to be salt and light and the mission to declare truth in the public square. Stand in the Gap Radio is supported through the prayers and tax-deductible financial gifts from listeners like you. Would you please consider a donation to help us increase our outreach of biblical truth? To learn more about us and make your donation, please visit StandInTheGapRadio.com. You may also give from our smartphone app. Download the Stand in the Gap app. Search for it in your web store under the heading Stand in the Gap. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in every weekday at the same time for Stand in the Gap today.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America.